Mr. Plotkin.
May it please the Court, Stephen Plotkin on behalf of the plaintiffs. We are before you today seeking reversal of the District Court's decision granting defendant's summary judgment motion dismissing the plaintiff's TILA claims. Those claims were based on the plaintiff's contention that a $10,500 payment to D&E Services should have been included among the points and fees that were assessed against plaintiff and paid from funds, from loan funds.
I didn't understand your peroration on page 37 of your brief. You say this court has accurately summarized the guiding principle involving TILA application. Hypertechnology reigns. Well, if hypertechnology reigns, doesn't that doom your case?
I don't.
Right? Because Moore and the Loan Center, they're not the creditor. They're, you know, some kind of crooked operation here, but they're not the lender.
The focus of TILA and HOPA are remedial.
It's bad lending, right?
It's remedial statutes to be liberally construed.
It's not a matter of some third party charging in and committing a fraud against the borrower.
Your Honor, Mr. Moore is the only employee of the mortgage broker.
Hypertechnology. Now, he's not an employee of Equicredit. He's some kind of shady character. I mean, the way he's depicted here, I don't know what the real truth of it is, but there it is. He's someone who charges in and steals $10,000 from the parties. I don't see what that has to do with the Truth in Lending Act.
The Truth in Lending Act, as amended by HOPA, includes as points and fees and part of the finance charge all compensation paid to mortgage brokers.
But look, suppose that she gets her loan, and she's walking home with her money, and it's stolen by someone. Now, you wouldn't, it says $10,000 stolen from her purse. You wouldn't call that a fee for the loan, would you?
No, of course not.
Of course not. But what's the difference?
The difference here is that Moore is the acting as agent for the mortgage broker. He's the only employee from the mortgage broker who performed all services that dealt with employers, the lender, other contacts, the title company, D&E Services, which he owns, which he runs, which he never disclosed to anyone, according to the facts that we've supported.
But, you know, under your theory, and I didn't see this really brought out as much as it might have been, the lender had to disclose fees paid not only to the brokerage firm, which was the loan center, but to all agents of the brokerage firm, which would include Mr. Moore. I'm not sure how you get the next step to D&E Services, which is his corporation, and I'm assuming it's a corporation. And
no, it's so unincorporated.
Unincorporated. Okay,
yes.
So all agents, and somehow they're supposed to know who those agents are, that's essentially the theory. Now, I can imagine a state law theory where you might say that Moore had apparent authority to act on behalf of the loan center, and therefore the loan center itself might be liable on some form of liability to Ms. Cunningham. I wondered why you didn't sue Moore, by the way. Is Moore anywhere to be found, or is he still working at the loan center?
He's no longer working at the loan center, and I wasn't sure whether we would be able to sue him because of some statute of limitation problems at the time. But I think that the point here is that Truth in Lending Act does provide adequate theory of legal liability.
But I don't understand, you know, not to say that, I mean, this looks like a horrible story, but it's very common at loan closings, mortgage closings, for there to be a couple of different payees, and if D&E Service was listed as a third-party creditor, what would have alerted Equicredit to think it was anything but, you know, paying the Home Depot or paying any number of other potential third-party creditors for home improvement?
With regard to Chase or payments to Citibank or any of the credit cards or Home Depot or the like, we have no problem about that.
But that's what D&E Services holds itself out to be, a home improvement company.
Federal Reserve Board placed an affirmative obligation on the lender. The lender didn't do it. For example,
but
on
the obligation you're saying was to investigate each third-party
on the
creditor.
Uniform loan application, D&E Services is not listed as a debtor.
Creditor, you mean?
Is not listed as a plaintiff's creditor. That's correct. There were no documents in Equicredit's loan document production which reflected an invoice or any type of proposal for home improvement that needed to be improved, in contrast to the $32,000 fee that was paid to Mr. Hunter from loan proceeds. That contract had to be submitted.
Yes, but look, but ordinarily the borrower would be present at the closing, right?
That's correct.
So if someone steps forward and says, you know, $10,000 of that money goes to me, because I'm your creditor, then presumably the borrower objects.
But that's why these HOPA...
So can't the lender assume that the borrower, that if there's some illicit claim to a share of the proceeds, the borrower will pipe up?
That's why these HOPA laws came into existence, Your Honor, because of reports to the Federal Reserve Board and Congress that established...
And the statute requires additional disclosures, but that's different from questioning the bona fides of other creditors who appear at the closing.
But the point is that Congress felt that there were persons whom were particularly vulnerable.
You're the one who says hyper-technology reigns. Now you're saying that in the interests of equity and recognizing the realities of these cases, the vulnerability of these people, we should have a very broad interpretation of TILA and impose a duty of investigation on the lender.
Excuse me. The hyper-technicality is directed toward the lender, and there's strict liability for the lender. The statute exists for the benefit and protection of
that's
the borrower.
That's not what hyper-technology means.
That's what it means in this context, Your Honor.
No, it doesn't. Hyper-technology means you're going to look at the literal terms of the statute, and you're going to apply them as written, and you're not going to look to the purpose and reinterpret the literal language so that it conforms to some legislative purpose.
I think, with respect, that's not what the purpose of the statute.
Technicality somewhere.
I understand
find
that.
It's not the same as strict liability.
I understand that.
Anyway, strict liability for what? Because you haven't pointed to a statutory duty to investigate creditors.
The official interpretations of Federal Reserve Board specifically
place.
Well,
how about finding a statutory provision that refers to, that imposed a duty to investigate?
It's not merely a duty to
investigate. Look, let's before we get to not merely, how about the starting point? Where is that duty to investigate?
It flows from the meaningful disclosure to allow consumers.
I don't understand how a duty to disclose implies a duty to investigate. Usually duty to disclose means it's like Brady, right? The Brady rule in criminal cases. The government has exculpatory evidence. It has to disclose to the defense. It doesn't have to investigate and look for exculpatory evidence.
Can I reserve my time, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Plotkin. Mr. Milbourne?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Harold Hilborn, and I represent Equicredit. We're the only one of the three defendants that's a party to this appeal. This is a case that arises out of a series of wrongs by people other than Equicredit, by the Loan Center, by the Loan Center's employee, Derwin Moore, and by the Reverend Marvin Hunter.
Can I take it you're now actually Nations Credit Financial Services?
Correct. Successor by merger.
So we should change the style of the case.
I believe that it would be fine to change the style of the case. We've throughout the case referred to ourselves as EquiCredit. We are and have always really been the caboose to this case, and the federal truth in lending counts that are at issue on this appeal are really a square peg in a round hole. There is absolutely nothing under the Truth in Lending Act or under HOPA that purports to hold a lender or a creditor vicariously liable for what amounts to nothing more than a civil theft.
Could I ask whether the record shows how much business, I'll call it EquiCredit because that's what it was, did with the Loan Center, or whether there's some hint in the record that these odd charges to D&E services that crop up at the last minute occurred in lots of files. So I'm just wondering whether EquiCredit had any reason to believe that the Loan Center was not an operation on the up and up.
EquiCredit had no reason to believe that D&E services was anything other than what the plaintiffs represented and held out D&E services as, which was a third-party creditor.
Is it common practice to get the underlying contract? So if somebody bought a lot of stuff from Home Depot and wanted to pay, you know, they bought, you know, tile for a floor or something that would run into the thousands of dollars, would you ordinarily get backup contracts?
I don't believe that would be the case. In certain types of situations, such as home improvements to be made, such as the ones that Mr. Hunter, that the Reverend Hunter performed, the record does indicate that it was practiced to obtain that kind of a contract because the work hadn't yet been done. But as to debts that the borrower wished to have paid off that may have previously been incurred, the lender does with that money exactly what the borrower says to do with the money. Getting back to your question about whether EquiCredit had any reason to believe that there was anything about D&E services, the record doesn't indicate how much business EquiCredit had done with the Loan Center prior to this transaction. What the record does show is that subsequent to this transaction, the plaintiffs have, in the course of discovery, found some borrowers who were not satisfied with disbursements made to D&E services. But what's critical about that record are really two things. The first is that all of these transactions post-dated the transaction between the plaintiffs and EquiCredit. And second, there is no evidence in the record, the plaintiffs developed no such evidence, that anyone had ever come back to EquiCredit and complained, hey, wait a minute, you paid out money to D&E services, and I don't know why. But there's just nothing in the Truth in Lending Act that creates any kind of an obligation to investigate the good faith nature of a debt. And under the plaintiff's theory of the case, what EquiCredit would have to do, and it's really something that makes very little sense, is that if a creditor such as a Sears were identified as someone entitled to payment, the creditor would have to go and inquire of Sears and inquire of the borrower whether the refrigerator was received, whether the aluminum siding was installed, and whether the borrower was satisfied with the goods that they received and the job that was done.
I thought it was a more modest demand in a sense, that here you had the Loan Center, which had wisely or otherwise delegated a great deal of discretion to Mr. Moore. And so it's more like if the creditor is Sears, or actually if the mortgage broker is Sears, you have to say, well, if the man who did all of the work as a brokerage is also listed functionally as a payee, shouldn't we collapse those two things together? I don't think they're asking to go as deeply into the transaction as you're portraying.
Well, that would imply that there would be something about the paperwork that was submitted in connection with the loan that would indicate that there was any kind of a relationship between the Loan Center and D&E Services, and there is nothing that would indicate that to EquiCredit. So even if the court were to assume that there are circumstances under which there might be some kind of a heightened duty on the part of the lender to investigate something, those circumstances don't exist here. There were opportunities for the plaintiff, in this case, to prevent the harm of which they're complaining.
I mean, it's a realistic matter. It doesn't sound like this plaintiff, who's portrayed as somebody with very little ability to protect herself, I'll say, could have.
Well, there is an opportunity under the Truth in Lending Act to do that, and that's the 3-day right of rescission that exists beyond the closing. And there is no contention in this case, and it's undisputed, in fact, that the plaintiffs received all of the disclosures that they were entitled to, that they received their HUD-1 settlement statement. And I think that Congress, in enacting TILA and in providing for this 3-day right of rescission, recognized that there very well may be borrowers who don't read everything before they sign it, who may not, at the time of the closing, know what a $10,500 disbursement to this D&E services-type entity may be. But that's why they've got 3 days after the closing to take a look at everything they receive and to look at a document that discloses an amount of money being disbursed to an entity that we're not talking about chump change. It's $10,500, and these are plaintiffs who had an opportunity to look at that document to see that here is someone who's identified as a third party creditor, and they have that opportunity to say, wait a minute, I don't owe D&E Services.
Do you agree that hyper-technology reigns?
I certainly agree that. I certainly agree with that.
This ground. So we don't have to worry about Cunningham's actual ability to protect herself.
No, and what I'd add to that is that hyper-technicality goes to things like disclosing, like the conspicuousness of a disclosure, like the accuracy of a mathematical calculation, the segregation of various disclosures on the document. Hyper-technicality reigns doesn't mean that a lender is required to disclose that which it does not know.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Milborn. Mr. Plotkin, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Something further?
Plaintiffs here had no chance. They were represented by the very person who absconded, who created the situation, prevented that information from getting communicated accurately to them, and prevented that information also from being portrayed accurately to the lender. I looked at 46 files that from the title company in which Mr. Moore was a loan broker. In every one of those cases, a payment was made to D&E Services. The idea of HOPA is to provide disclosures 3 days before closing so that somebody like the plaintiffs would have an opportunity perhaps to consult with counsel or someone else. In the situation that existed here, they had absolutely no chance to be able to protect themselves at that time or at a later time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel.